Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 47 of our live monthly Q&A with Cinten's employment team. I'm David Pritchard, Head of Marketing here at Cinten's. Joined again today by my colleagues who are on the screen there in front of you. We have partner Max Winthrop and we have associate Catherine Hope. So they're joining us today on this last working Friday of July. Usual format. Same as the 46 previous episodes, three questions that you've sent to us across the course of the last month, and the guys are going to answer those. Catherine's going to deal with questions one and three, and Max is going to answer question two. So enough from me, straight over to Catherine. Catherine, happy Friday, and over to you.
Thanks, David. Good morning, everyone. So the first question we had in today was, does an employee have the statutory right to be accompanied at a probationary review meeting if they'll potentially be dismissed at that meeting? So the right to be accompanied, as most of you will be aware, is covered by the Employment Relations Act 1999, sections 10 to 15. And the right to be accompanied applies if a worker is required or invited to attend a disciplinary hearing by their employer and they reasonably request to be accompanied at that hearing. Now, for the purposes of this right, a disciplinary hearing is a hearing at which could result in a formal warning being issued to that individual, the taking of some of the disciplinary actions such as suspension or dismissal, demotion, or the confirmation of a warning or some other disciplinary action. So it covers it would cover capability issues and conduct issues. So I think if you're looking at the wording of the statute, that I think there is a risk that a probationary period, if it was tested, where that could result in an employee's dismissal, could well be covered by the legislation, meaning that that individual would have the right to be accompanied if they reasonably requested that. I think what's important to note in practice is that if you fail to, you know, if someone makes that request and you fail to allow them to be accompanied and they have that right, the remedy, they can bring a claim in the Employment Tribunal, and that it requires no particular length of service as an unfair dismissal claim might, but the compensation that can be claimed is limited to 2 weeks, a maximum of 2 weeks pay, and that's capped at the statutory week's pay, which is currently £643. So you might take the view that actually you won't generally allow employees to be accompanied at a probationary review meeting, even where dismissal is going to be confirmed. And that is what I tend to see a lot of in practice, because you're looking at, okay, what's the risk? What I would say is it is really important, although likely to be rare, to check your contracts and policies just in case there is something in there that gives an employee the right to be accompanied at a probationary review meeting or at certain stages of that process. I haven't come across that in practice, but again, we always need to check the contracts and policies to make sure there's nothing in there too, thinking about the statutory position, but also the contractual position. I am aware, although I haven't been able to find the judgment, that only at first instance a tribunal has found in the past that where an employee was dismissed at a probationary review meeting, that they did have the right to be accompanied. And that was a meeting where they were informed that they were going to be dismissed. But I haven't been able to locate that judgment, and it is a first instance decision. But I guess in this situation, if you're wanting to take the most cautious approach, you would give the right to be accompanied if the meeting was to result in dismissal in this situation. But I think you need to look at weighing up, and employers will look at the risk and benefit. You might take a more of a commercial decision, and this just doesn't apply just to probationary review meetings. It could apply to a decision to dismiss when someone doesn't have 2 years service, but they've passed their initial probationary period. And you might take the view that, and this can be to do with the particular employee, or if you anticipate they might take a particular course of action, if they're given the heads up and they know that the meeting is likely to result in dismissal, that they may then go on sick leave to try and avoid that or delay things. And then the difficulty there is you're dealing with a very different situation as opposed to making the decision to terminate because someone is not performing and is not passing the probationary requirements. So it is something to think about, and you may then just decide that if they decide to take that forward, that you would just pay them the equivalent of 2 weeks, capped at statutory weeks pay, if they raise an issue to bring the matter to a close. So it's an interesting one that it doesn't come up much in practice, but we have the odd question about it. So it's a useful one to come up. And I'll pass you on to Max with our second question.
Good morning, everybody. What alternatives are there to the employment tribunal to resolve workplace disputes? Quite an interesting question, because when you start thinking about it, in one sense, the employment tribunal was always set up as an alternative in the first place. So if you go back into the ancient history of kind of industrial relations, instead of putting these disputes in a court, there was perception felt that judges were kind of, this is back in the 70s, out of touch with workplace culture, and a different body was needed. And Parliament found one in the Industrial Tribunal. It existed before employment disputes to resolve certain types of health and safety dispute. That jurisdiction has almost vanished, and we're left with the tribunal. And those of you who have had the misfortune to get caught up in tribunal litigation will know how long, how costly, and how draining they can be, both in terms of resources, whether you're talking about financial resources or management time, and just the psychological impact on the workforce of having to go through some of these processes. So what's the alternative? Well, if we stick with the classical employment type dispute, unfair dismissal, discrimination claims and such like, of course these actually kick off with an alternative, and that's the ACAS early conciliation scheme. And that can be a kind of ready-made alternative to going through with litigation if there's a willingness to settle. But supposing things have moved on a bit further than that, do you still have the opportunity to use alternative means of dispute resolution? Well, of course, ACAS is available right up to the point in which the tribunal give its judgment. But there can be certain situations where a more formal approach is both necessary and I think can be sometimes useful. And as an alternative, particularly to the longer employment tribunal dispute, there's the process known as judicial mediation. Now, I have to confess, I'm a great fan of judicial mediation. For those of you who've not been involved in it in the past, it's usually only available with the tribunal's permission. And the factors they will look into will be things like, is there an ongoing relationship? How long in particular is the case going to be? What are the sort of issues in dispute? So that by way of a clear example, if you're talking about a discrimination case lasting more than a week, then the tribunal may well be quite keen for you to have a judicial mediation, because judicial mediation takes a day rather than a week. It's often now conducted through CVP, Cloud Video Platform, which is the Ministry of Justice's version of Teams. But what you get for that is an experienced employment judge, and he's there not to decide the case, not to say you're right and you're wrong, but to kind of build on the party's knowledge, experiences, and see whether or not a solution to the whole dispute can be arranged. It helps that in my view that it's an employment judge, because it's somebody that both sides can trust, and both sides can say, well, here's somebody who knows what they're talking about, here's somebody who can predict what might be the ultimate outcome of an employment dispute. So, as I said, if the opportunity arises, I'm greatly in favour of judicial mediation. Now, we may see changes coming in the legislation where there is a more focused and a greater push to use alternative dispute resolution. We've already seen this in the civil courts, for those of you who get caught up in civil litigation, where there's, I wouldn't say there's compulsory alternative dispute resolution, but where you have cost shifting, i.e. the loser pays, there's quite a lever to get parties to go through and experiment with alternative dispute resolution. Now, of course, some employment cases don't go to the tribunal. So if somebody's got a salary, not that unusual these days, in excess of 130,000 a year, then they may well have a contract claim that will exceed the tribunal's £25,000 jurisdiction. If so, your options are, as an employee seeking to recover those losses, either to waive the difference or go to the civil courts. So in one sense, the civil courts become the alternative to the employment tribunal. And of course, there are some types of employment dispute that don't go to the tribunal anyway. Probably seem a little ironic, but if you think of the classic labour capital dispute, the strike, issues concerning the strike and the right to strike are matters for the civil courts already. And there is also an almost forgotten body called the Central Arbitration Committee, and that deals with disputes over things like trade union recognition with regard to consultation issues and with regard to certain types of collective bargaining dispute. And that takes a very much more, I suppose, perhaps a less legalistic approach than we've become used to in the tribunals. So I suppose the takeaway from all this is I would keep an open mind on how you're going to resolve disputes. Different disputes kind of require a different approach. There are some things that you're never going to resolve and you're going to go to the tribunal over. There are other things where perhaps taking a step back and thinking, do I really want to spend 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks fighting this particular claim? Are there better ways of resolving it? What about judicial mediation? What about the opportunities working through ACAS to bring a result? Will give you benefits and will be probably less stressful and less consuming in terms of manpower and resources, and not to mention fees overall. So hope that's useful, and back to Catherine.
Thanks, Max. Just as a final point, I thought it would be useful to touch upon the changes to the flexible working regime that have been announced. We had news that the Employment Relations Flexible Working Bill received royal assent last week on the 20th of July. Now, the Act, it's now therefore the Employment Relations Flexible Working Act 2023. It's not yet in force, but when it does come into force, which we expect to be in about a year, it will introduce some changes to the current statutory regime around flexible working requests, which is currently covered in the Employment Rights Act. Now, the changes that it will introduce include that employees will now be able to make two flexible working requests within the 12-month period. At the moment, that's only one. However, they've confirmed that it won't be possible to make an application when you've got a current one already proceeding. Employers will now need to make a decision if they receive a formal flexible working request within a 2 month period. It's currently 3 months, but there is still the possibility for the parties to extend that by agreement. Another change is that employers will not be able to make a decision in relation to a flexible working request until they've consulted with the particular employee. Now, at the moment, there's no guidance about what that consultation has to include as a minimum, but there may well be some further information about that that comes out at some point. On a final point, there's also no longer going to be a requirement for an employee in their application or their request to set out what the effects of their the requested changes might be and how the employer might deal with those. So that's going to be removed. I think it is important to note, just because there has been a lot of discussion about it in the media, and also the government referred to it when it announced that the bill had received royal assent, this particular act doesn't cover and it doesn't introduce the change that will make the right to request flexible working a day one right, as opposed to you needing to have at least 26 weeks service. The government has confirmed that that is going to be introduced, but it's expected that that will be in secondary legislation, which we should hear about over the coming months. As I said before, it's expected that this won't come into force together with any secondary legislation dealing with the day one point for another year. So we'll just have to keep our eyes out for that. And the view behind that is to give employees the chance to prepare for the changes. It's also important to note that the Act is going to be supported by a statutory code of practice, which is to be delivered by ACAS, and that's currently under consultation. So I think it's just useful and important for us to keep an eye out for when the legislation will come into force, because when that happens, it's important for you to be updating your flexible working policies and just making sure you know that your managers who are dealing with these requests on a day-to-day basis know what the requirements of the organisation are and what they need to do and what the employees' rights are. So thanks for joining us this week, and I'll pass you back to David.
Thanks very much to both of you. Enjoyed listening to that one. Very quickly for me, as I say at the end of all of these sessions, we'll continue to work hard to produce, release, deliver useful and relevant content, articles, podcasts, blogs, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look at that. And that includes all episodes of this live Q&A session dating back to the early 2000s. So there's a lot of content, a lot of content on the employment section of the website as well, including all our bulletins. And we do those in both written and podcast form. So lots of stuff to digest. And if you haven't had enough of us by that point, you can also follow the team on Twitter at SintonsHR. I've just popped our speakers' details back on the screen there in front of you, just to add email addresses: Catherine.hope@sintons.co.uk, max.winthrop@sintons.co.uk. We will be back with you on the last working Friday of August, again live on Teams at 10 a.m. Thank you once again for sending in your questions. Thank you once again for tuning in and for watching the sessions afterwards. We generally do appreciate it and never take that for granted. Have a great summer, everybody, and we will speak to you in August. Thank you.